Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
True Hauntings is a Frightfully Good production.
One of the most haunted sites you will stumble upon in Ireland is also one that has been a religious sanctuary to an order of Franciscan friars since its establishment in the 15th century.
Created on instruction by the voice of God himself, the abbey was also a place of pain and suffering, having been raided by English troops set on removing Catholic orders from the country. Those citizens that would not leave were threatened with torture and death. The abbey ruins are eerie and still hold a presence about them that will have you expecting to hear the friars at prayer or walking through the cloisters at any minute. Hi, I'm Renata.
And I'm Anne. And in this episode of the True Hauntings podcast, we go to the land of soda bread, Kerrygold butter, the greenest grass you will have ever seen, and where history, faith, and incredible turmoil all go hand in hand. Join us on this eerie exploration of the haunting legends and terrifying tales surrounding one of Ireland's most iconic locations, Muckross Abbey.
Anne and Renata have been investigating paranormal occurrences for the past 20 years. They have been at the center of various unexplained phenomena and have witnessed countless ghostly experiences. The duo now turn to high-profile cases that have attracted the eyes of the world. Between the dimensions we see and the dimensions we don't, supernatural forces are at play. Evil lurks within the shadows of our homes and in the darkest corners of our minds. It follows us like a shadow, forever. This is where nightmares become reality. This is True Hauntings.
In the refectory of Muckross Abbey, where the monks dined and where visitors were shown hospitality, there was a big fireplace from which welcoming heat radiated. When the abbey was unoccupied during the mid-18th century, the recess of this great fireplace became the bed of a man known as John Drake, who, from around 1750, lived amid the ruins. He was said to be under 40 years of age, refined in nature and scholarly in appearance. He never discussed his past, his plans, or his reasons for adopting this unusual abode. He built himself a bed made from pieces of old coffin boards and placed some straw on them as a sort of mattress. He windproofed the nearby window with earth and rubbish. This was his chosen residence for at least 11 years. He never asked for alms and was never known to eat in any dwelling other than his own. He had enough money to buy some food, and indeed was known to give a half penny and his prayers to any person who seemed more destitute than himself. The kindly Muckross people treated him with great respect and never invaded his privacy. It was assumed that John would live out his life in the abbey, and that his mortal remains would be interred in the adjoining graveyard. But these expectations did not come to pass. One day, in late springtime, John was nowhere to be seen. Just as suddenly as he had arrived to the abbey, he now disappeared. His bed lay unruffled, but nothing else remained. John had gone quietly into the dark night and was never again seen in Muckross or heard of anywhere else. The mystery of the unusual life of John Drake in Muckross remains just that, a mystery of a quiet and gentle man who arrived unannounced and departed without a trace.
Welcome back to the studio, Anne.
Thank you, Renata. It's been a while, hasn't it?
Yes. Seems like forever.
We've been gallivanting.
Seems like forever when we don't do these once a week.
Yeah, but we've also been in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
We've done one since, haven't we?
Yes,
It's all mush in my head at the moment. I've got no idea.
Well, the problem is we're already organising our next tours, so
yes.
That's done and dusted. We're on to the next one.
All right, next.
And the next one is in Ireland.
Yes, and this is one of the places we're going to visit.
Yes, so if you are interested in finding out information about our Ireland tour, head to the notes that are associated with this particular podcast, and you will find the link to Mysterious Adventures and have a look at the Frightfully Good Adventure to Ireland in March of 2024. And join us, because there is a list as long as your arm of all the places we are going to visit. We are going to be exhausted.
Happily exhausted.
And happily exhausted.
And full of soda bread and Kerrygold butter.
Absolutely.
We need Kerrygold butter as a sponsor, I reckon.
I'll be happy with that.
Yep.
But
pay us in butter.
That's right. And yes, we have previously been. I have been once. I think you've been twice.
I have been twice.
Oh, you lucky thing. Yes. When we went together, it was dark. Couldn't see a thing. So I have not seen it during the day.
No, neither have I. I've only ever seen it when it's dark.
I need to see it during the day as well, because it's a fascinating place. But the structure itself at night is so eerie, especially with the yew tree.
Yes, the yew tree. I think I still do have that as my screensaver on my phone. It is stunning.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. And you can feel the presence of this majestic tree that's in the centre of the abbey.
Yes. And I remember
I've got goosebumps just talking
about it. I remember
when
we went, it was autumn, so the colours were changing. Oh, we actually spoke to Danielle. I spoke to Danielle yesterday briefly, and she said, this is our Irish correspondent, Danielle. And she was saying to me, oh, you would love the colours of the trees right now. They are everything from the lightest of yellows through to the gold to the deep burgundy reds. And I said, I hate you. And I need photos.
I just remember us driving through Ireland in those little roads, and we'd just be going,
stop the car, I want to play the leaves.
Oh, it's
like
just
idiots.
But then spring is just as beautiful, because we were there in spring last year.
This year.
All right, let's get on with it. Dave Schrader will have to be cutting out all this stuff that we're rattling on with here. Hello, Dave Schrader and the Paranormal 60. And welcome to all the new listeners from Paranormal 60 who have come across and listening to Auntie Anne and Auntie Renata.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Carry on with our drivel.
Thank you so much for joining us and being a part of our show as well. Muckross Abbey. Now, this is both an old Irish monastery and also a modern Irish graveyard. There is a graveyard next to it. Who would have thunk?
I know.
We wouldn't have seen it during the night.
Yeah, the first time I went, they would sort of said, yeah, you can stay here in the abbey or you can go out into the graveyard. And I've gone, there's a graveyard?
Yes.
Because it's just so dark, you can't see it.
That's right. Now, it is also situated in the middle of the national park, and it's a 5-minute walk from Muckross House car park.
Yeah, it wasn't that far.
So it dates back to the beginnings of Christianity in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, those crazy Christians. It's the first monastery, the first monastery was reputed to have been built here by St. Fionnan. Fune. And look, I'm going to butcher all the names. I'm sorry. I'm saying
see
straight away.
The shoulder action that's going. Fune. Every time you got it, the shoulders are going up. It's great.
So I apologise straight away. Any Irish people can call up and
abuse
let us
Renata.
Know. Yeah, let us know how to pronounce these things.
No, don't.
And it is said that it was built sometime in the 6th century, so in the 500s. And the name Mucrus means the wood of the pig. Very nice. That's
That's romantic.
That's romantic and scenic. And it refers to the early practice of pasturing hogs in the woods.
Oh, okay.
Okay, nice. Now, as mentioned before, Mucrus Friary was established under the patronage of Donald McCarthy, and he was born in 1373, and the establishment of it was around 1440.
Hang on, wasn't it established in the 500s or
Hold
something?
On.
Oh,
there's,
sorry.
There's a couple of establishments
here. I was listening for a change.
There's a few refoundations.
Right, okay.
So you've got Donald, who established it in 1440. You had St. Fionnan, who was...
Shoulders went again.
Who established it in the 16th century.
Say it again. Say it, Fionnan.
Fionnan.
Yeah, shoulders went again. You can't Fionnan. Help it. I've got to wish I had a camera on. All right.
And there's also a story that says that Donald's great-grandfather, Cormac McCarthy Moore, wanted to found an abbey, and it appeared to him in a vision, so by God, and he was instructed that he should build it nowhere else other than Carrignashula. That's as close as I'm going to get to how you say this, or the Rock of Music. So he sent, allegedly, his men out to search for this place, but guess what? They couldn't find it. But along the way back to Cormac, they were passing a small village when they heard the most beautiful music coming from a rock. Yes, you heard me right, from a rock. Maybe that's where rock and roll comes from.
I was going to say, was it rolling?
Rock let's and not roll? Go there. And this is then where the abbey was founded. So, on a rock. The Rock of Music.
We better go
and listen to it. Listen for it.
Yeah.
This time when we go.
Well, I won't hear it because I'm deaf as anything. So you keep telling me.
Yeah. So the first reference of Mucrus.
So all those people who think I pick on Renata all the time, let me tell you, when these microphones off, she's horrible to me. I'm in tears all the time.
Oh, what a lot of rot. The first reference to Mucrus occurs in a bull of 1468.
The talking bull of 1648.
A bull is, writings.
Just remember this is writings. Listening, waving your hands around and not going
to
let people know what it is.
Just consider that I'm continually moving as I talk.
Yes, she's doing helicopter arms either side.
And that indicated that the community had actually been in existence for about 20 years under the observance of their guardian, Richard Shilvart, or Shilvar, or Shilva, whichever one you want to pick.
Yeah,
it's Richard anyway. Dick. Under the guardianship of Dick. Dixie.
No, it's getting worse. Stop it.
So what you see today are the ruins of a Franciscan friary, and it's in it's a pretty good state of preservation.
Yeah,
with
is.
All the walls of the cloister and its associated buildings still in their original and complete state. Now, the monks of Mucrus Abbey were driven out in the 1650s by the infamous Cromwellian forces. Mm-hmm. So Oliver Cromwell was out to destroy all of Christianity everywhere, and he did pretty well. He destroyed more or less everything that it could lay his hands on. Now, the first attack on the friary came a little bit earlier in 1589 when soldiers of Queen Elizabeth had a crack at it and they attacked the community.
That's a historical term, had a crack at it.
It is. And then the Cromwellian forces came along. Now, Father Donner O'Murthill and his companions.
We're so intelligent.
Fled, and he, I just can't do this in Irish. And his companions fled, and they hid their sacred vessels and valuables on one of the islands in Loch Leen. However, they were captured and put to death. And as mentioned in the introduction, anyone who wouldn't leave, they were given an opportunity to leave, and anyone who wouldn't leave was literally put to death, tortured and put to death. So the friary was sacked and burned in 1652 by the Cromwellian army under Lord Ludlow. And a year later, Friar Francis O'Sullivan was the head of the 60 Franciscan houses in Ireland, and he was put to death on Scariff Island. And his body is buried somewhere on the island, but his skull was preserved in the sacristy of the Killarney Friary. We need to go and find his skull.
Oh, I wonder if it was deep in the friary. You don't get my joke? Okay, no. That's getting worse.
No.
I'm trying hard. I'm out of practice of being funny, obviously.
So the friars returned in smaller numbers until the penal laws came into effect on the 1st of May 1698. Now, under these laws, all Catholic orders were told to leave the country under the pain of imprisonment, transportation, or we're going to kill you.
Yep, nothing like peaceful religions, is there?
So Father Anthony O'Kelly, who was the Franciscan provincial at the time, decided to obey the law, and the majority of the order went into exile in France or Spain. Many of them returned to Ireland at a later date, probably when it was a little bit more quieter.
And safer.
Now, the Abbey, as you can guess, with all of these upheavals and uprisings and raids, this happened to be something quite frequent that occurred. Now, local gangs also got into it because, you know, why not? Let's see what we can get out of the friars.
Chico rolls, hot chippies.
And as mentioned before, the armies of Elizabeth I and Cromwell often came through and damaged and rebuilt and damaged and rebuilt and damaged and rebuilt the whole thing.
So I wonder if our American listeners know what Chico rolls are.
No, we'll have to put a picture up.
Sometimes they're called mystery bags. It's a beautiful pastry that's fried deep and golden, like a long case around a sausage. But
no, what did we have at the Cheesecake Factory that looks like
that's the egg roll.
Egg rolls. Yeah, so it's like an egg roll with a really
thicker, fluffier pastry. But what's inside, we're never quite sure.
No.
But sometimes you get a bit of cabbage. Sometimes you get a bit of something that could be a bone. Might be mince. It's delicious. Am I selling everyone on it?
No.
I'll look up a Chico roll.
Can we give our Americans that come over a dinky dye dinner?
Yeah, we'll have to have meat pie, tomato sauce,
Chico rolls,
and potato scallops.
They'll all go away. Oh, have we not squirreled?
Oh,
stop it.
Sorry. Oops. There goes the ADHD.
Right, where am I up to? Friars Glen on Mangerton Mountain is said to have been one of the places the monks would flee when the monastery was attacked. Let's go up to Friars Glen. That sounds like somewhere where no one would find them.
Oh, they wouldn't think to look in Friars Glen where all the friars had gone,
no,
would they?
Not at all.
No.
There were a series of small cottages there where the monks would shelter. Oh, honestly. So this happened numerous times over the history of the Abbey, and one of the darkest times of the Abbey's history was in 1589 when Elizabeth I raided the place. Now, unfortunately, with all of these raids, in most cases, those that fled. They're all captured and executed without even a second thought. Around the time of Elizabeth I, two innocent men, Father Donna O'Mahony and his companion, were captured. They were tortured and stoned to death in Muckross Abbey. So if you're looking for two names to call out during your EVP sessions, you're after Father Donna and his companion.
You've forgotten already.
There is no name. Oh, sorry.
Okay.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
So Father Donna and
your
companion.
Best, and your best
buddy. Your best mate. Oh, dear. But look, it's good to know these names because when you go to these places, you've got a call that you can call out to.
We didn't have that when we went and we did a spirit box session.
Yes.
And we had some interesting things come up that were then validated later on.
Yeah. And so wildly ridiculous that we kind of thought it's got nothing to do with Muckross Abbey, but it did. Okay. So during penal times, masses were held at the abbey, which was no longer occupied. In 1788, it was said that there was a mass held on a temporary altar. The mass was attended by four or five friars and drew a large crowd from the local area. In 1929, the first mass was said in the abbey since penal times. The mass was attended by nearly 3,000 people from Cork, Tralee and Killarney. In 1940, the 600th anniversary of Muckross Abbey was celebrated, and the mass is still celebrated each July to this day. So over the years, of course, there have been numerous stories about hauntings at Muckross Abbey, and it's often considered to be the most haunted place in Killarney. So it'll be interesting if you have some of these interesting stories that I have come across. Now, have you got anything about a gentleman called George Drake? Yes, John Drake. You just told that story, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Yes, you did.
And that soundscape today came from the mayor of Muckross. He actually wrote that for an article. I can't see where it is now, but I thought that was interesting that the former mayor wrote that.
Yes. Interesting thing here too. Now, we seem to come up against the name Bram Stoker. He's been around that guy. He's been around everywhere.
He has.
Getting inspiration for his work. Now, apparently, he was quite young at this time because it says a young Irish author named Bram Stoker often visited Killarney and was known to have spent time around Muckross Abbey at night. It is thought that he drew some inspiration for his famous work, Dracula, from his time in the area. Oh, honestly.
Yeah, I had a bit of information on him, and we might go through all the hits that we think might belong to Count Dracula.
Now, before I finish up, I'm just going to let everyone know visually, if you could visualize this in your head, what the abbey looks like. So the compact abbey is made up of a rectangle nave and a chancel church with an inserted central tower between them. Adjoining the nave is a south transept, while on the northern side of the church are the cloisters, which beautifully surround the courtyard and an ancient yew tree. And honestly, this yew tree is freaking magnificent. It looks like it's been screwed into the ground because it twists
it
in
does.
On itself.
I'm actually sitting here looking at a picture of it right now.
So the refectory is located on the north side of the cloister, to the south is the abbot's house and kitchen. The dormitory is located on the east side of the cloister, and fragments of wall paintings show the importance of art to help motivate friars' private devotions. That can be taken many ways.
Yes.
The ancient yew tree is arguably the most beautiful feature of Muckross Abbey. I would suggest that it is true.
Yes.
And in the centre of the garth is, that's where the yew tree is. It's smack dab in the middle. You can't miss it as you walk around the cloister. There is no way to get around it. And it's said to be the oldest yew tree and the oldest of the species to be found in Ireland. Imagine the stories that he could tell. Now, there's a local legend, I'm going to finish on this, that a miraculous image of the Virgin Mary is buried underneath the tree, and anyone who damages the tree will die within a year.
Yep, there goes most of my stories. Thank you, Renata.
Oh, all right.
That's all right. No, I've got plenty.
All right.
But I did have a couple of those. I might have a little bit more information on some of them, though.
Mm-hmm. Okay, hand it over to you and the ghost stories.
Over to me. So the first magical thing or supernatural thing that happens is that the abbey was founded on the Rock of Music. So it's going to have a layer of something special there to start with, I feel.
Mm-hmm. I think you should say what the Irish word for that is, the rock of music. You're not getting away with it. Carrig na Siúla.
I didn't have it written down, so I'm not avoiding anything. Ha, ha, ha. Yeah, so now...
She's still not saying it.
I'm not saying it because I don't have it written here to be able to look at it.
Follow my words. Listen to my words.
I'm deaf.
Listen to... All right, keep going.
So there are many sort of stories that I have found, and some of them have very varying themes. Now, this is where I'd have to...
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's Amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Okay, where to start? Right, I think I'll start with the yew tree because we've been talking about it. So, yes, it is very famous. It is huge. It's ancient. It rises out of this central courtyard up over the top of the building. Now, I looked up some of the legends and superstitions surrounding this tree, and it is said that if anyone is brave enough to nick the bark with a knife, that the yew tree will bleed. So blood will pour from it. There is also another legend that should anyone who does that to the tree, that they will drop dead. Now, I do remember when we were there being warned not to touch the tree, because there was a lot of legends surrounding. But I can't help but wonder if that's not just to protect the tree.
Mm. You know, the fact that I did read in an article that I was reading that the yew tree does, when it is nicked, drip a red resin.
Yeah. And for the first several hundred years of its life, apparently when you nick a yew tree, it has red sap that comes out, which looks like blood. So it's thought the tree is haunted and that it bleeds, but in actual fact, it's just the sap. But by God, that's a good story,
isn't
it? That
is a good story. Keep your hands off that tree.
Now, some experts believe the tree is up to 400 years old. They can't work out whether the abbey was built around the the yew tree, or whether there may have been something planted there before that they built around it and then planted the yew tree afterwards. I've seen many different interpretations of how old the one, which this one came from a little blog, said they did a jaunting horse carriage ride through the national park to the 700-year-old Muckross Abbey that was built around a 1,000-year-old yew tree.
Okay.
The roots of the yew tree are poisonous, and it's said to be very bad luck to touch one. I didn't know that they were poisonous, but there you go. So it's now gone from 300 to 400 to 1,000.
Let's make it 10,000.
Oh, just keep going.
A 10,000-year-old tree.
Yeah. So there is another one in a book called Heritage Trees of Ireland that Aubrey Fennell noted that normally one of these trees would be planted over the grave of a monk who has been absent for 100 years and returned to die there.
Oh, God. Well, in my story, it was the Virgin Mary.
Well, hang on. I'm getting
not,
to...
I mean, not her.
I'm,
not her,
I'm but... getting to that. All right? Okay. I'm getting to that.
All right. Okay.
Jumping the gun.
Okay.
There's a legend that the miraculous image of the Virgin Mary is buried underneath it. So I've heard there's a statue. This is saying an image. I'm pretty sure they didn't have photos or anything those days. Maybe it was a painting. Don't know. Buried underneath the tree. But then I heard it had been buried underneath a dead tree somewhere else, and they dug it back up again, and it was all whole and miraculous. But this one said it was buried underneath the yew tree, and there was a warning attached to it, and it went unheeded by a soldier who hacked off a small branch which dripped blood, and he promptly dropped dead.
Oh no.
Oh. All right, now there is a I had the miracle of Our Lady. This is the same thing, but where it says that it was buried under a dead tree. The statue was saved and the dead tree sprang back to life. It's a miracle. The Lady in White. Because we cannot possibly have an episode without the Lady in White making an appearance.
She gets around, doesn't she?
She does. Did you hear about the Lady in White?
No, oh. I heard about the Lady in Brown.
What? Just...
I'm not saying anything. I just said Lady in Brown. That's all I'm saying. Three words. I don't know anything about a Lady in White, though.
I'm rolling my eyes if you can hear it from there. Now, the Lady in White, I don't know how to say this. The Duchess School's folklore collection. There's repeated entries of a tale about a local landlord named Herbert. Now, Herbert had demanded some of his servants dig up the graves in the church, burn the bones, and scatter the earth on his gardens.
Oh, why?
He probably wanted some blood and bone on his gardens. Get some good roses happening. Some big carrots or potatoes. Don't look at me like that.
That's just ridiculous.
This is the story. This is my job, to find these stories. And I didn't even use ChatGPT
God.
Not once this time.
Keep going.
It's all my own research. One day, Herbert was walking near the church. This is Muckross. And a woman in white jumped up behind him and hit him, knocking his face 180 degrees. So he lived the rest of his days facing backwards.
I love it.
His dying words years later were, "Muckross, must I leave you?"
Oh, he would have always been looking as though he was going somewhere.
But we keep saying to people, don't look over your shoulder. Don't look at your past. Look to the future. Mm. No, he was always looking backwards.
Yeah.
All right. I've got some general information about there's terrible shouting and screaming could be heard at night from the Abbey, but during the day it was deathly still.
Crickets.
Crickets. Crickets.
Chirp.
I'm sorry, I cut off your chirp.
Yeah, of course you did.
I'm rude. But now we're going to talk a little bit about the Hermit. So we mentioned John Drake and... how he just turned up at Muckross Abbey and lived there. So he made his home. Now, this one says a deep recessed kitchen window, whereas the other one said it was a big fireplace. He used coffin boards and clay to cover up the windows instead of rubbish. He slept on coffin boards covered in straw. Yep, we had that, with only a blanket. He cooked his meals in the kitchen fireplace. Some people thought, you know, gossip runs amok, doesn't it?
No, it sure does.
Oh, boy. Some people said he'd committed a crime and sought to seek his penance in the ruined abbey. He might just be sick of people. I get that. Mm. Totally get that.
First ADHD.
That's it. Well, it would either be autism or ADHD where you just got to get away from people, but then you crave. Because we can talk about this because we've been diagnosed. So it's okay. We're not being rude. We are talking about our own experiences. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you crave to be, well, I know I do, out in front of people and entertaining. And then other times it's like, I don't want to see anybody. I just need to sit quietly and study my navel. Sorry, I've just squirreled. So, they thought he was seeking his penance, praying, small garden, offering to help, all that, rah, rah, rah. Right, so after 11 years of living in the abbey, he left. Yep, we got that. Some years later, a young woman arrived to Killarney looking for him. She was educated and cultured, and she spoke a foreign language. Very little is known of the woman, only that she stayed in Killarney for some time visiting the abbey regularly, and that she wept in the window recess, prayed where he prayed, and gave generously to all who had helped the hermit.
Oh, maybe she was his daughter or a long sister, lost cousin or something.
You don't know. It doesn't say, oh, there's a young woman? Yeah, so maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But that came from retrace-apps.com. So I thought that was just a little interesting snippet I found in regards to that.
Mm.
Now, I saved this ghost story for last, but this is not the end of the podcast, right? We've got some other things to discuss because we have our own personal experiences there. Now, this is the ghost of the brown man.
Oh, it's a brown man, not a brown woman.
It's a brown man. And this... There was very many different stories. I'll give you some examples. A man who, upon going missing one day, was found by his wife in the abbey graveyard feasting on the flesh of...
Sorry, what was he doing?
Was found by his wife in the abbey graveyard.
What was he doing?
Feasting.
Oh, feasting.
What the hell? Who's deaf now? He's feasting. There was nothing to do with fists in there at all, Renata Daniel. oh, no. How was that? Oh, we're going to get a wheeze.
Oh, sorry. I've been at a wake today. I need some fun.
That explains the jovial nature, doesn't it?
Oh, dear,
this is just going to make it worse now when I say this.
Sorry.
Yeah, all right.
Don't
so
be
he
offended.
Was found by his wife in the abbey graveyard.
Sorry.
Feasting on the flesh of one of the corpses.
Oh, no. Oh.
Just having a snack.
Oh, dear.
And then there's another one that said there's the legend of the brown man who had a newlywed whose bride came looking for him one night to find a husband knelt over a recently dug up corpse feasting on its flesh.
So we've got like a vampire story going on here.
Ah, there we go.
Ah.
Yes.
That's really interesting.
It is. So maybe this is... Anyway, we're going to talk about that later.
Mm-hmm.
But I hate to be a party pooper. And you know I do like to be a party pooper.
Okay.
I can debunk this. This is supposed to be a ghost story, right?
Uh-huh,
this is supposed to be something that's happened. Gerald Griffin's chilling short story, The Brown Man, has largely been forgotten since its initial appearance in the collection of Holland Tide or Munster Popular Tales of 1827. Apparently he was trying to be a playwright and he created all these stories things and they all sort of flopped a little bit.
Yeah.
But let me read you the story. See if you think there is any similarities here whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
As the story is so little known, it may be useful at this point to provide a brief narrative synopsis.
I like a good synopsis.
Oh, no, right. The scene is set in a remote part of West Munster. where a widow named Guare and her beautiful daughter, Nora, live in poverty and near starvation. Their plight appears to improve when Nora is courted by and marries a strange horseman known as the Brown Man, who promises to make his new wife a lady, with servants at her call and all manner of fine things about her.
She was being scammed.
How do you know? You must be psychic. But on arrival at her new husband's home, Nora finds that the Brown Man's estate is a wild bog, and his palace a clay hovel, while the only food available is a handful of raw white eyes and a little salt.
That sounds terrible. What are white eyes?
I don't know. I'm hoping they're berries with salt, because if that's fish, I'm out of here. The bride trembles at the sight of the marital bed. A little straw in a corner, but worse is yet to come. That night and the next, the Brown Man leaves the cabin, returning to bed cold as ice half an hour later. On the third night, he leaves again, but this time Nora secretly follows him, winding through a lane of frost-nipped sallow trees. To her horror, she sees her new husband, his horse, and his dog in the graveyard of
Macross Abbey,
seated on an open grave, eating something.
Oh.
And glancing their brown, fiery eyes about in every direction. The next day, a terrified Nora pleads to be allowed to visit her mother. The Brown Man refuses. I didn't marry you to be keeping you gadding. What? I didn't marry you to be keeping you gadding. I think that means buggering off and doing something else. But offers to fetch the widow himself. In due course, the widow appears and Nora confides to the horrifying sight she has witnessed. My husband by the grave and the horse. Turn your head aside, mother, for your breath is very hot.
Ew.
Her mother has hot breath.
Oh.
Is it stinky? And the dog. And they eating. Are you not my mother? Shrieked the miserable girl as the Brown Man flung off his disguise and stood before her, grinning worse than a blacksmith's face through a horse collar.
That's horrible. Blacksmith's face through a horse collar. That's some swear.
Mm-mm. He just looked at her one moment, then darted his long fingers into her bosom.
Mm.
Oh, he went for a grope. Good heavens. From which the red blood spouted in so many streams. She was very soon out of all pain, and a merry supper the horse, the dog, and the Brown Man had that night, by all accounts. Does it sound sort of familiar?
Yeah.
It's called Seven Devils, Gerald Griffin, The Brown Man, and The Making of Irish Gothic by Sinead Sturgeon. Mm. That was the paper that she had written, so yeah. I took that segment from there. But it reminds me a little bit of, what's that one near the airport that we stayed at that had the Sweeney Todd thing?
Mm-hmm.
The, what's it, feathers, something?
Ostrich. Yeah. Ostrich in.
Yeah, it had something to do with feathers. Where there was a short story or a book or something that then became the legend of the place.
Yes.
Do you remember this story being told when we had our guide?
Yes.
You do?
This particular story, no.
About the Brown Man eating the things.
No.
Yeah. I don't remember it either, so maybe they're not telling the story. But on researching this particular one, it kept popping up all the time. So the Brown Man is a legend, and feasting on the flesh of exhumed corpses.
Hmm.
So what are the similarities to Dracula? What could he have possibly taken Bram Stoker to use? There's the coffins,
mm-hmm.
sleeping in the coffins,
mm-hmm.
and the feasting on flesh, or the, of, I mean, that's dead flesh, but still,
mm-hmm.
It would have been part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What else was there, Renata? Were you listening?
Yes, but I can't think.
No, neither can I.
The Abbey, like a sanctuary type of thing.
Which would have been his castle.
Mm-hmm. And him taking a wife.
Yes, and the stranger. People sort of knew him as a stranger. Yes. Would just suddenly appear and then and suddenly disappear. That, we had one of our New Orleans stories. Sorry, New Orleans.
That's John. That's the fella that lived in the cemetery for a while.
Yeah.
In Macross Abbey for a while.
Yeah.
Arrived, and came, disappeared, really never ate anywhere else except in his place.
Mm.
Kind of never needed money, yet could give half a penny.
Yeah, he could give someone. Money away.
Mm-hmm.
So they thought that he might have been rich. Mm-hmm.
Didn't really need a bed. He slept on coffin boards.
She obviously didn't hear me say that early, did she?
There you go.
So there's all these little bits and pieces.
Mm-hmm.
That you could see where Bram Stoker
may
have collected them together. But let's have a quick chat about our experiences. Now, I had an experience, this was BR, before Renata,
mm-hmm.
where I went to Ireland with my lovely husband, Roman, and we were on Dave Schrader's Ireland trip. And we were on one of those bus trips, which our people are going to experience the Dublin one, which is hilarious, where they took us to the Abbey and it was really freaky. We had little pebbles being thrown at us. We'd sort of huddle around the guide and they'd tell us things. And then all of a sudden somebody jumped out at us and we realised that there was somebody there. So we didn't know whether the pebbles being thrown at us was real.
What a shame.
Mm. He said it wasn't him. He mm-hmm. owned up to other stuff he did, but he said that wasn't him.
Mm-hmm.
But at some stage, they all went out into the graveyard and Tammy and I went upstairs because there's still stairs there, a winding staircase to go up to the top level. So we went up there and I took my spirit box and I put it out and we were asking questions and doing a session. And all of a sudden, I heard somebody running up that stone stairwell.
I remember you telling me about this.
Yeah, and it was like really loud, heavy, booted footsteps. And I looked at Tammy and I went, oh, somebody's coming up the stairs. Mm-hmm. So I turned off the spirit box and ran over to see who was coming up the stairs and there was no one there.
Mm-hmm.
So I ran down, use that term loosely, but I moved quickly and wanted to see if I could find if somebody had come back from the cemetery part. There was nobody around. I went straight out into the cemetery and found the group. Everybody was there and they said that nobody had left.
Mm, wow.
And it was that heavy and that loud that it really sounded like soldiers' boots.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be armor, but some sort of heavy clothing coming up the steps, mm-hmm. like with intention. Mm-hmm. Like it was a bit scary. So that was my experience at Muckross Abbey. So
wow.
You tell them about when we went with Danielle and our tour guide.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
The only thing I remember is that Danielle, I think, was on the spirit box and doing Estes. So
yes.
She had headphones on. And she was mentioning some American person.
No, she was calling out names. And we had the tour guide there with us because it was just the three of us. We booked him for a private and we were able to use his history and knowledge to ask questions. Mm-hmm. And he was a little taken aback because there were some things that Danielle was saying. Now, she's Australian, now living in Ireland, so she didn't have the knowledge on this place. None of us had done any research on it.
No.
And he was asking questions and she was calling things back, but then mentioned the name Benson. We all went, oh, that's not very Irish, is it?
No, it's not.
And then we thought about it and we thought, oh, hang on, that might be British. Is this maybe one of the times where the British came over
mm-hmm.
and caused mayhem and murdered people? And later on, we looked it up. Well, no, I think Danielle actually got her phone out and started searching there and then. And Benson was one of the commanders of the army that was in that region.
Mm-hmm.
So quite possibly got a really good solid hit on that.
Mm.
So Renata just did a quick Google search to see if we could find the article that she found. And of course, we didn't have time. But I love Muckross Abbey. I'm drawn to it. I just feel the need. Every time I go to Ireland, I just want to go visit there. And I had one of my most profound paranormal experiences with those boots running up the stairs. And it was great that I had someone else there to witness it.
Yeah.
It wasn't through the spirit box. Mm-hmm. I did have a digital recorder going at the time, but the spirit box was on this side and over the other side was the where the boots were coming up. So you couldn't hear the boots.
Uh-huh.
But it was there because we were both shocked.
Mm-hmm.
So Renata, the question is...
Yes, it is.
Well, I think because I've had experiences there myself, I would agree. I would have to say this is haunted, but also the bloody history of the place.
Yes. Over years and years and years, the torment and the suffering...
For people's beliefs.
Yeah, this was supposed to be a place of sanctuary for the friars. They were praying, they did their thing, and that was it. And, of course, when things changed in England... the requirement was for it to change everywhere and they were just destroyed time and time again.
And people talk about bloodthirsty religions that, you know, talk about they're going to kill you all. The Christians were just as bad as everyone else.
Oh, yeah.
So that brings us to the end of this week's episode. If you've enjoyed it, please feel free to shout us a cup of coffee at Buy Me a Coffee, Anne and Renata. We'd really appreciate supporting our work and allowing us to keep going. You can also become a Grand Poobah Patreon if you would like to and get the behind the scenes and special lives that we do twice a month, if not more. And also we have some other levels there if you'd like to support our work. But Renata... It's a true haunting and we're going back.
Yes, we are
going
back.
And you can come with us.
You can come with us. It is March. We're going to be in Galway on St. Patrick's Day. And so, please, if you are interested, reach out to Mysterious Adventures and look up the Frightfully Good Adventure to Ireland. It's got something to do with St. Patrick's
Day. We'll be in Galway on St. Patrick's Day. That's going to be a hoot. Yeah.
So, yes, you can just secure your spot and then actually pay it off. So, wow, there's nothing stopping you. And honestly, there is a list of at least two or three things that we are going to be seeing and doing every single day we're there.
Oh, I think there's more than that. But anyway, thank you for joining us. We'll see you on the dark side.
Remember to stay spooky.
Be frightfully good.
Don't be a dickhead.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of True Hauntings. If you like the show, give us a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. For more on Anne and Renata, follow at Anne and Renata on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, or visit their website, www.anneandrenata.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.